Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Starve Rock Murders. I'm your host, Andy Hale. I've got my trusty sidekick, Whitney Braun, here. Whitney, so good to see you.
It is always good to see you, but I got a bone to pick with you because you left me with a cliffhanger last evening, and I would like you to tell people what you did so that they understand how I have been agonizing over this this mystery for the last 12 hours.
I texted Whitney a photograph of Chester Weegar and another gentleman. And I said to her, I said, you want to take a guess at who the guy on the right is? Chester Weegar was on the left. And she texted me and said, who's that next to him? And I said, a chance encounter at the grocery store. This guy recognized Chester. And then I called her and I was going to tell her all about it. And then I just spur of the moment said, no, you know what? I'm going to wait. We're going to do this on the podcast. So Whitney has been waiting since last night to know what this is all about. So Whitney, I'm sorry to do that to you, but I wanted your raw natural reaction.
Okay. I'm ready.
So here's the story. This just happened yesterday, and I wanted to record this today. Yesterday afternoon, Chester Weegar is at the grocery store with his two nieces. Chester is pushing the grocery cart down the aisle, and they're walking along, picking up a few things, you know, from the aisle. This older gentleman walks up. He grabs one of the niece's arms, and he gets in real close to her, and he says, he didn't do it, very dramatically. And they look at him, and they're kind of like stunned. They weren't sure, you know, what was going on. Chester's up a little ways, and this niece was kind of behind Chester and his other niece. They have a short conversation with this guy. You know who this guy was, Whitney?
I have no idea.
I can tell you're sitting down.
I am sitting down. I have no idea who this fellow was.
Louis Ghosh.
Shut up.
Can you effing believe that?
What?
He was, for people out there, it's spelled G-O-E-T-S-C-H. I think it's pronounced Ghosh. It's hard to say. He was the justice of the peace, that local grocer that signed the arrest warrants when Chester got arrested. He's 95 years old. He is alive and recognized Chester Weegar at the grocery store.
I just got chills.
Can you believe that?
That's crazy. I didn't know he was still alive.
No.
B, I mean...
And let's put it in context. He's still alive, A. B, he recognized Chester. C, most importantly, first thing out of his mouth, he didn't do it. Can you believe that? Talk about a bombshell. Holy schmoly, with a capital H and a capital S.
Well, there's something just like brilliantly, poignant about this, because it's like, This is 6 decades later, and for him to have, and I'm not trying to be an ageist here. I live part of the time with my 98-year-old aunt, and she's sharp as a tack. But generally, our memory might fade or weaken as we age. And to be 95 and to recognize Chester and the nieces, and then just to me, that's
flabbergasted. Really,
it's beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time. That's
exactly
crazy.
No, it's also incredibly sad. No, 100%. It's both. Tell me, Whitney, the universe isn't trying to help solve this crime. To bring these two guys together in the grocery aisle. Are you kidding me?
Like, that feels like a scene in a movie.
God, you couldn't script it.
You sent me that photo, and I didn't make any connection because, well, I think, A, I didn't know what Mr. Ghosh looked like, and so an aged version of Mr. Ghosh didn't, you know, register with me. I just saw these two very elderly gentlemen in the photo you sent, but, like, oh, man. Like, yeah, no, you can't script that. Like, it would never occur to me. Well, A, it just wouldn't occur to me that he was even still living. I'm sorry. I mean, I wouldn't have expected that. And then to have him recognize Chester.
There's so many things that just blow my mind about this. But let me kind of continue the story because so there was just a short conversation. They were kind of blocking the aisle, people trying to get by. They did get a chance to take this photo. One of the nieces said, hey, can we get a quick photo? So they took a photo of Chester together with Mr. Ghosh. It's a cute little photo. And then I don't know exactly what was said, but Mr. Ghosh said, hey, I'm 95 and, you know, I just don't want to get involved. I think they said, oh, would you mind talking to Chester's attorney? And he said something like, oh, I'm 95. I don't want to get involved. And it was a short little interaction and they kind of parted ways. So I have not had a chance. Obviously, this just happened yesterday afternoon. By the time this airs, I'm hoping to have an update. I'm definitely going to reach out to Mr. Ghosh. I'm going to try to talk to him, see what he knows. Obviously, this is incredible, and I'm hoping he's got some really good things to share. By the fact he said he didn't do it, I'm assuming he's got some good things to share. So I'm just hoping that he will get involved. He will tell his story. He will tell us all what he knows. But I am over the moon excited to talk to him, for sure.
I mean, you got to figure he cares enough. For a man who doesn't want to get involved, he got involved, right? He cared enough to approach Chester and his nieces in the grocery store and make a declaration of innocence.
And he's 95. I mean, you know.
What do you got to lose?
Well, you know what this made me realize, Whitney? This made me realize I better make a list of everybody involved and just see if they're alive, because I was making assumptions that basically people were deceased. And Mr. Ghosh being 95 is a great example. There might be other people out there that are around. I'll give you another example of a story. You know, I'm trying to talk to any and everybody. I was looking back at that Illinois State Police interview of Glenn Palmateer, okay? And the main Illinois State Police trooper that interviewed him was a guy named, his last name was Murphy. I forget his first name. So I thought to myself, you know, and he was one of the guys that did surveillance in Glenn Palmateer's bar. And so during his interview of Glenn Palmateer, he said, hey, we've been in here. We spent hours in here and we've seen you talking to this loopy, the Chief Cardenas. So I thought if there's anybody that thought the Palmateers were involved in this, it'd be those troopers that were doing surveillance in the bar, right? So I Googled him. I found his obit. So he was deceased. But then I saw he had a daughter and I thought, well, maybe he's talked about this with his daughter, you know? So I tracked her down in Arkansas and she was super interested and fascinated by what I was telling her. And she first got my hopes up. She said, oh, you know, when my dad retired, he moved down here. And then when he passed, you know, we found in the attic of his house, he had boxes and boxes of all his old cases. And I was like, I got super excited. I'm like, oh my God. And she said, but you know, we didn't know what to do with him. So we wound up burning them. And I was like, oh man.
What?
And so, yeah, I get it. But like, my point is, there could be more people out there who were involved, who know something. So you know what? You and I got to make a list. We got to just start reaching out because there might be more people out there. So this is incredible. I mean, what an incredible start. I'm going to have more to say on this, obviously, and I'll keep everybody posted on my attempts to talk to Mr. Ghosh. And I'm hoping, you know, that we can sit down and have a good chat. But what a stunning chain of events yesterday.
Where was this?
In the grocery store.
But I mean, but what town?
Well, I don't want to say that yet.
Oh, okay.
But it was, you know, near Chester's house, not in the same town, but you know, they're out grocery shopping. So, oh my God. I mean, what an incredible, and to think that Mr. Ghosh recognized him, right?
I know.
And came up to him and approached him. Well,
so that begs like sort of two questions. Either he's been following the case all along and recognizes Chester from more recent photos, or he hasn't been following because he doesn't want to get involved, but just recognize Chester's face because it's seared into his memory. And either way, it's sort of poetic.
And, you know, he's such a huge part of the case. So our pending post-conviction petition has two main components. One is innocence, that Chester's innocent with all the evidence we have, the newly discovered evidence, you know, supporting the innocence claim. And the second part are constitutional violations. The main one being that Chester was arrested without probable cause. I mean, the only thing, you know, that he got convicted based on his confession. You know, that was the only real evidence, you know, not even linking him to the crime. But he got arrested. They served him with arrest warrants before he confessed. All right, so before he confessed, what was the basis to arrest him for this triple murder? There was nothing. Based on what? Oh, you failed a polygraph? That's nothing. I mean, there's nothing. There's no forensic evidence tying him to the crime. There's no witnesses tying to the crime. There was no basis to arrest him. And I believe, in my opinion, that's why they got the local grocer, the justice of the peace. They didn't go to a judge. You know, they got these flimsy arrest warrants. And Chester got arrested. And then you got to keep in mind is it was under the pressure of already having been arrested and charged with the triple murder that he confessed. Okay. You know, this was different now. He had now been arrested and charged with the triple murder. So Mr. Ghosh, I mean, was an integral part of how this all went down. So at least he's got knowledge of that part and maybe more. We'll see. We'll find out. To be continued.
To be continued. But I have a question, Andy. In all your years of reviewing cases, have you ever had a murder case where the warrant issued was issued by the same dude in the community that issued fishing licenses?
No, I mean, well, this case is so old. No, I mean, it's crazy to see that. So that part, we're going to let that sink in. Let that all sink in. Oh, my gosh. So that's part one of this podcast. So
wait, there's more?
Stay tuned. There's more. I want to talk about this in part two. And so I don't want to, I mean, I hate to even move on because it seems like I'm diminishing the significance of part one with Mr. Ghosh. I mean, we could just stop right now, but that's huge, okay? And maybe that's just all we need for an episode right there. But I also want to talk about a part two, which is I'm trying to do more investigation. Let me explain. So, you know, as we sit here today, you know, in February 2024, Will County has said they're not going to change their mind. They still believe the confession is legitimate and truthful. And so what do I have to do? I'm going to keep investigating, right? I'm going to keep plowing forward. So I recently wrote a letter to the Will County State's Attorney, James Glasgow, and his assistants. And I said I would like to do three areas of non-destructive microscopic examination. And I attached a letter from Microtrace that they sent to me. And I'm going to post all this on the podcast website, but it was a five-page letter signed by Skip Palahniuk and his son, Chris Palahniuk, attaching photographs of the things we want to do a non-destructive microscopic examination of three pieces of evidence. One, and there's photos attached to their letter so you can see these. One is a wood fragment, like a chunk of wood found at the crime scene, maybe the size of like, you know, a quarter or maybe, you know, maybe not quite that big, a nickel. The other is some locks and curls of hair, and the third is some red fuzz. Let me talk about those in order. The chunk of wood, I believe, could have broken off a baseball bat used in the attack. I might be wrong, and if I am, no harm, no foul. But what if I'm right? What if that chunk of wood, it kind of looks like maybe it was part of a baseball bat to me. What if it broke off a baseball bat? And Microtrace has told me by using high-powered microscopes, they can analyze that wood fragment and tell, for instance, is there varnish on it? Does it have a kind of a smooth, rounded edge? They'll be able to tell whether it is or is not part of a baseball bat. Let's take best case scenario for Chester Uyghur. It is part of a baseball bat. What does that mean? All right, let's pause. We already know from my expert forensic pathologist, David Fowler, that he said the injuries were caused. These women had horrific injuries. Their skulls were fractured. Their heads were bashed in. He said it wouldn't have happened from little objects like a camera and the binoculars, not the log. It'd have to be a heavy object swung with force. And there were cylindrical injuries that he said would be consistent with something like a baseball bat. And there were some angular injuries that he said could have been caused by like a tire iron, the end of a 2x4. I think a baseball bat is very likely. Let's say we prove a baseball bat was used through this wood fragment. That, to me, alone proves, with everything else we have, Chester didn't commit these murders. I mean, does Will County really think that Chester Uyghur, on his work break, walked out into the woods carrying a baseball bat and then bludgeoned the women with that? No. I mean, you know, it's a baseball bat is premeditation. Somebody brought the bat there to kill somebody. And so I think this is a potentially huge, huge, significant point. The second is these locks or curls of hair, and there's a picture again that we'll post. It's kind of a pretty thick clump. It's almost like I took a scissors and cut off an inch of your hair. Michael Trace told me it looks at first blush like maybe those hairs were cut. And they will be able to tell through a microscopic examination if those hairs were cut. And if they were, again, that is completely inconsistent with the Chester Uyghur botched robbery, you know, story, this nonsensical confession. There'd have been no reason for Chester Uyghur to cut off a piece of their hair. There's no mention of him having a knife or scissors. The women weren't stabbed. It is consistent with some kind of a mob thing, I think. You know, we already know Francis Murphy's fingertip was cut off. And if there's hair cut off too, it sure seems like somebody kind of wants proof of the job done. So I think that's also a significant forensic area of investigation. And then the third is this red fuzz, this puzzling red fuzz that in 1960 they could determine was red Orlon. Well, now we've got much more sophisticated analyses and databases. Microtrace might be able to figure out where that fuzz came from, like from a blanket, from a car mat. And that can also be a huge clue. Let's say it came from a blanket. Okay, Chester Uyghur was not out in the woods with a blanket. Like, you know, what does that mean? Were the women carried? What, you know, did it come from some other person's clothing? So I've asked, you know, and I'll pay for all this. I will pay for Microtrace to do this non-destructive microscopic examination of the wood, the hair, and the red fuzz. And they've told me no. They're not going to agree to it.
But because why?
They,
why?
Let me finish. Yeah. They're, you know, they're trying to box me in. There's a statute that says, you know, a defendant, the Illinois statute says a defendant can do certain, it's for all you kind of, you know, people that really want to take a deep dive. It's 725 ILCS 5/116-3. And I'll post this on the podcast website. It's called Motion for Fingerprint, Integrated Ballistic Identification System, or Forensic Testing Not Available at Trial, or Guilty Plea Regarding Actual Innocence. So it basically says it gives defendants in prison the right to do certain types of forensic testing that could, you know, prove their innocence, like DNA testing. So what Will County is saying is, oh, this doesn't fit under the statute. And my point is, that's not what I'm asking for it for. I'm asking you to join me together to investigate the case. Put the statute aside. That's just, you know, Will County can do whatever it wants as part of its investigation. Will County, I'm asking to join me as a collaborative effort to do this forensic, non-destructive microscopic examination. And I don't see how you can argue it's not relevant and significant. If all these results break Chester's way, you mean to tell me it's not significant to proving his innocence? So it's just extremely frustrating that Will County would not want to do this.
I think I know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It's like, if you're the one paying, if it's not destructive, if it's no burden on their back, why say no? I don't understand. What is the logic of saying no? Who is this harming?
I don't see a good reason to say no. And the other thing is, there's no contamination issue. Even if somebody touched this piece of wood, what we're looking for is varnish and the smooth edge and the same thing with the hair. We're looking to see if it was cut and the red fuzz. There's no contamination issue here. So Whitney, I cannot see any legitimate reason to not do it. You know, it's a search for the truth. Picture this. Let me give like a hypothetical. Let's just say somebody got arrested for a crime and their sweater was found at the crime scene, right? And after the crime, after they get convicted, the person says, well, you know what? That wasn't my sweater. If you look at like there's like a name in there. If you look real close, I think there's a name of somebody on the name tag or something. All right, that's not a DNA test. It's a forensic examination. And what if you looked at it under a microscope and you just determined something about the sweater that it wasn't the defendant's sweater, like that could prove their innocence. It was left by somebody else. Like there's all kinds of trace evidence constantly being analyzed in cases to help solve crimes. I'll give you, Microtrace has done this hundreds and thousands of times. I mean, Skip Palahniuk could give you examples. Like for instance, in the Atlanta child murders, he gave crucial evidence. There were some carpet fibers found on the victims that got traced to the guy who got arrested's house. So they kind of matched the fiber to his house. There wasn't DNA evidence. It was an analysis of trace evidence. Skip Palahniuk solved the Green River serial killing by analyzing a small, minute paint particle that they linked to the DuPont plant. And then they figured out that the killer, Gary Ridgway, worked at this DuPont plant. He solved another case he was telling me about where a woman got raped. The guy put a his T-shirt over her mouth to muzzle her. He analyzed that and found some kind of like particle that he said came from somebody in the drywall business. And guess what? They used that to figure out the guy was a drywaller and they cracked the case. Like, he could give you hundreds of examples of this, of analyzing trace evidence. There's all kinds of clues left at that Starved Rock murder crime scene through trace evidence. And Chester Uyghur right now, Will County is blocking him from doing that because they're trying to say everything we want to do has to fall under this DNA statute. And I'm saying, no, you can do whatever you want. You should be investigating the whole crime scene. Let's do it together. And I'm paying. I'm paying for it. So it's just, oh my God, Whitney, it's so upsetting that blocking me from getting access to this evidence. I'm going to go to court on this and we'll see what happens, but I shouldn't have to. I mean, Will County should be doing this together with me collectively. Let's analyze the crime scene and then we can talk about what we found. We can debate what we found, but how do you not do it, right?
There's like three things about this case that drive me crazy. It's like, one, to me, it just feels like it's so obviously a hit. And I just want to talk about it like it's a hit on these three women and stop entertaining the possibility that Chester did it alone, which is still the state's position. It drives me nuts that there is evidence that could be tested, but for no logical reason, the Will County is just saying, no, we don't feel like doing it. And then it drives me, I think most crazy of all, that the time is ticking. And that Will County has to know, or the persons involved at Will County have to know, that they are purposely running the clock.
Well, they've had the case. They've been on the case for 3 years. We're recording this on Tuesday, February 27th. I think it won't air until next week. But this Sunday, March 3rd, I'm going out to see Chester Uyghur because that's, you know what? It's his 85th birthday, March 3rd. So we're going to go have a little birthday party with Chester and celebrate his 85th birthday. 85th birthday, Whitney. I mean, when Will County got involved, he was 82. So time is of the essence. And when I met Mr. Glasgow the first time, he told me time was of the essence. He said, how old is this guy? And I must have said, like, you know, 82. He's like, oh, my God, you know, we got to get to the bottom of this. And I don't know what, Whitney, something changed. Something changed that I know. Why
something
I don't
is rotten
know.
In Denmark, man. Something is rotten in Denmark.
Do you remember Hannah, my daughter Hannah, when she was little, used to read like these Madeline books. You
know, yeah.
The Madeline series.
Oh, of course.
And there'd
always
be a line from Miss Clavel and it'd be like, something's not right. Something is not right. That's what I think about. Something is not right, Whitney. Again, I go back to, let's test whatever we can. Let's look at all the clues and then let's see what we got. And you know what? We can debate how significant each particular thing is, but to not even allow us to do it, especially this baseball bat part. I mean, hey, it might not be from a baseball bat. I get that. It might not be. But what if it is? How huge is that? I mean, I just think that shows so much about the crime, you know? And so this is going to be, we'll see where this goes. I'm going to have to go to court on this, it sounds like. I'm still trying to, in fact, today I'm going to send Will County another letter kind of pleading with them just to do this in collaboration with me to try to change their minds, but I'm not optimistic and I think I'm going to have to go to court and I shouldn't have to. And, you know, I mean, we should have done this years ago. So this episode had kind of a mixture of optimism from Mr. Ghosh and a little mixture of pessimism from the frustration and difficulty we're having testing these new items of evidence, but stay tuned.
Okay, I'm going to end on an optimistic note, which is that in the working relationship that you and I have had, Andy, there have always been these moments where there's sort of a sign of good things to come. I feel like that moment in the grocery store is a sign of good things to come.
Me too. I really do feel like the universe is lining things up for me now. I mean, that encounter at the grocery store is incredible. I can give you a couple other examples of things that happened that I'm not quite ready to disclose yet, but I'll talk about more down the road. Where I've had, you know, just yesterday, I had another thing happen. I can't talk about it yet, where it was just an incredible, like, chain of events that I'm like, this is no coincidence. Like learning another person's identity who I think could be important that I need to talk to. So I do feel like it's all coming together now. And this final push, the stars are aligning. And I just want to get there as soon as we can, because time is of the essence. And one last thing, just so people know the context, I am responding to this. Will County filed a motion to dismiss our post-conviction petition, basically arguing our evidence isn't new and isn't material, meaning it's not significant, wouldn't change the result of a retrial. I think they're wrong. And so my brief is due by March 10th. There's going to be a hearing April 10th where we'll argue that. So I'll have updates on that as we go along. I'll post the state's brief and I'll post my brief on the podcast website too. Plenty of things for people to look at if they want to take a deep dive, including this letter I sent to Will County, including the microtrace letter to me, talking about all the testing they can do and the photos of these pieces of evidence. There's going to be a lot of cool stuff to look at. So check it out. Stay tuned, everybody. I'll be back with updates hopefully soon. Whitney, it was great seeing you again.
Same.
So to be continued for sure. This podcast was produced by Phineas Ellis and Studio Friends. Design and promotion by Bell and Ivy. I'm your host, Andy Hale, with my sidekick, Whitney Braun, who's amazing. Stay tuned. We'll be back soon with an update. I can't wait to continue the conversation.